Okay, as Anne-Marie said, I'm going to talk about using ASCOT to inform care practice. So all the ASCOT tools began life as research instruments, but what I want to think about is, can they be used to inform care practice? And what I'm going to concentrate on is the care homes version of ASCOT, CH3. I'm not going to talk too much about the actual tool, because Anne-Marie gave an introduction. So briefly, it measures current, expected, and gain. It has three levels rather than four. It rates the eight domains. But perhaps most importantly to understand, it uses a mixed methods approach to understanding outcomes. And by that, it's observations. You're in the care home, seeing what's going on. You do interviews with, if possible, the residents. And you might talk to staff and to family members if they're available. So it gathers together a whole wide range of information. And that's what we think gives it its strength in terms of thinking about informing care practice. Because as well as getting a rating of a social care rating quality of life, it also provides very rich data about the lived experience of residents. Because you're there, because you're seeing what's going on, you're making notes. And it's this very rich data, about what goes on in the everyday lives of people who live in the care home, the residents, the care practice that goes on. This is what we feel allows you to start having, it's allowed to have potential for improving practice. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a study conducted for the School of Social Care Research called AFIS, the ASCOT Feedback Intervention Study. It was led by Anne-Marie and was also carried out by my colleagues Sinead Ryder and Elizabeth Welsh, who aren't here today. And the ASCOT Feedback Intervention Study, or AFIS, the background to it is we had some anecdotal evidence from users of ASCOT that they found giving feedback after using the CH3 tool really helpful for care teams to think about how they may approach their jobs and how they may approach improving the quality of life of residents. And we thought this was really interesting. We thought we might follow this up with a feasibility study, seeing if we could give feedback from this research tool to staff teams, open up a discussion of what this meant, and seeing if that improved the residents' quality of life. So we recruited a number of care homes, and the final study had two nursing homes, and two residential care homes, plus two pilot homes, so a total of six homes in the study. And we used CH3 on two occasions. So at time one, we measured residents' social care quality of life, and then we came back 3 months later and did it again. But directly after that first collection of data, we went back into the care homes, and we had several meetings with managers and care staff and cooks and people who did maintenance, all sorts of people who worked at home, about what we found, about what life was like for the residents in terms of the ASCOT domain. So we would talk about various things, and we'll come on to that. And then we tried to move the discussion on to think about, well, how could we and them address this? How could the things we'd found feed into changes in the care home, changes in practice? And what I thought I'd do is I'll give you some kind of examples of some of the things we shared with those teams, the care teams. So this is one care home, and this is all about current social care rated quality of life. So this is care home two, where our ratings of social care rated quality of life with regard to food and drink was that 60% had no needs, 33% had some needs, that's a quality of life issue, and 7% had high needs, so quality of life so bad it was impacting upon their health. And what we're going to do is concentrate here on that 33% who had some needs, so a quality of life issue around food. So we've identified from the ratings there's something going wrong in terms of food. There's a quality of life issue around food. And what we found is that this was mainly down to residents they didn't have enough choice, or the choice was limited. So if we go back to our observational notes, what we find is we have things about menus. So menus on each of the tables, that sounds good. Menus telling what's happening. Today's lunch, a choice of haddock or scampi, so only fish. You could choose, but you could choose one fish or another fish. And then looking at our notes, because we were there for a couple of weeks, it wasn't long again before Scampi and Haddock came up again. So it was quite a regular, and then, in fact, we noticed another thing, that steak pie or chicken supreme, so a choice of one meat or another meat. So although there was a choice, it's a limited choice. So, and for some residents, that was a problem. Another observational note is about a resident sitting at a table. Another resident pushed the table next to them, offered a drink, and that resident isn't offered a drink, not given a choice to drink. And then we have interviews with residents, and here's some of the evidence. So residents ask, what is the food like here? And she says, not bad at all, not bad, not princely, but, satisfying usually. And then later on, it's asked, do you get a choice of meals? Well, not much. So not much choice. Not really. No, not really. But it's a choice of take it or leave it, I suppose. So what we find out quite clearly is that the issue for a number of residents around food is not that it's bad quality food, it's not that it's at the wrong times, it's that the choice is a bit limited, and in some cases it's the choice is take it or leave it. So it's a limited or lack of choice, so that's the issue. So that's what we find out. That's what lies behind that 33%. And I will do the same now, presenting from another care home. This is about occupation. So what you have is just under half who've got no needs. They're occupied. And again, just under half saying they've got some needs. This is a quality of life issue. And almost 1 in 10 having high-level needs. So their quality of life is so poor in that domain that it could have an impact on their health. And that's that 1 in 10 of the people who took part in the study. The quality of life in terms of occupation is so poor that it could impact upon their health. And that's who we're going to concentrate on in terms of the evidence. What lies behind that 1 in 10? What's actually going on? Residents who had high needs did almost nothing they enjoyed. Residents who saw doing no activities. We saw them doing nothing all day, and staff confirming that. Residents who tell us they're bored and then we clearly see they do nothing. And we have evidence sitting behind that. So we have a resident interview. So what sort of things do you like to do here? Well, not a great deal. I think it's up to ourselves to make sure we're involved in something. So a resident telling you, actually, I'm left to my own devices to try and, there's nothing organised, no help, no support for me to be occupied. And then another resident telling you about, if you're sitting in one room all the time, there's just nothing to do, you just sit, and people come to and fro. They haven't got time to stop and chat to you. They're very busy doing something every time. And it does get very, very bored. It's just you're in here and it's a dead silent sort of thing. So it's clear voices of residents telling you about their lives of not doing a great deal. And particularly that second one, you can feel this person is quite upset by this. And if we add to it observations with this person, I don't think I ever saw them out of the same chair over. And I probably spent 25 days, and I'm not sure I ever saw them not in that chair. And there's some observational notes, and I won't go through all of them, but it's basically the story of one person you're coming back to during your observation, seeing what's going on, and they're sitting in a chair, they wake, they fall asleep, they doze, they wake again, they move their feet to the clock, there's a clock ticking, and you watch their feet. And that's the most active they are all morning, until lunch comes, and most residents go to the lunch in the dining room, and this resident stays in their chair and eats lunch on their own, and they say at the end, check back in the afternoon, the resident is still in the same chair. So this is a really clear example of what lies behind that 10, about 1 in 10. This is someone who at 11 o'clock in the morning is in the chair doing nothing, at 3 o'clock is still doing it, and every time you've checked, that's what they're doing. They're doing very little. The only thing they've done in that time is tap their feet to a clock, going tick, 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 and eat their lunch on their own. And that's it. So you can see what life, what that lived experience is like, what that high needs means for that person. So now what I want to talk about is what actually happened with that data. We shared this with managers, with carers, with all kinds of people who worked there. And in this care home where we identified occupation as a real issue for some people, they went away and really thought about it, and we talked about this, and it fed into a whole new set of activities. And in particular, they employed the services of a company that specialised in activities for people with dementia. And thought about how to run regular themed sessions, and they were also training their staff as well. It wasn't just a company coming in and doing something. It was a company coming in and doing things and training staff how to do activities that could be enjoyed by all the residents, not just those who perhaps had the capacity to do certain things. So these were themed sessions of music, movements, remembering, sharing, visual words. And an earlier version of this presentation showed how important words were to people in this care home. There's a lot of stuff about reading, how people enjoyed reading and stories. So it did draw on some of the stuff we presented and the things we told people that they got pleasure from. So that's what kind of happened from our kind of evidence, our feedback sessions in this home. And this is a quote from one of the care home managers who took part in the study. After the study had finished, we went back and sort of found out, well, how did you find the study? What did we know? What was participating like for you? What impact did it have? And this is probably the best quote. So I completely changed the whole setup of the working day. So I looked at smaller groups of residents. The staff were coming back to me and saying, we haven't got time to complete all of our tasks with so many residents. They now have more time to spend with the residents in terms of social care. The little things, painting nails and so on and so forth, and the lipstick, it's all very, very important. So that took the onus off a task-orientated workload. And they went on to say that our feedback had given them the evidence and the kind of push they needed to do. It's not they hadn't been thinking about making these changes, but it was, you know, a bit of evidence and a bit of look. Here's someone else saying as well, we can make these changes. So fed in. 1 minute, okay. Okay, so that's CH3, the care homes version, which is perhaps the tool that has the greatest potential, and we've shown it there, that it has probably more than potential to inform care practice. What about the other versions of ASCOT? So you have self-completion, SCT4 and SCT3, and the structured interview of INF4 and the other carers. What potential do they have? Because obviously they don't have all the evidence behind them that you can draw on. You just have the figures. So this is more of a question, really. So this is evidence from the second to last adult social care survey. So it's SCT4, current data on all the domains. And looking at it, I was thinking, actually, it does give you a start in thinking about care practice, because what this clearly does, what you're looking for in terms of high needs is the purple along the right and the green for the summaries. So you can see where those needs not being met quite clearly in these kind of domains, which I don't know if you can read up there, but they're those higher order domains, the occupation, the social control. So what it's identifying is at least nationally across a range of services, they are the kind of things that need further work. So what those versions of ASCOT do is help you to identify the areas where it might need further work to inform changes in care practice. But you could also think about using ASCOT alongside other data that gives you an insight into what goes on in care institutions. So that's kind of where we're at thinking about this. So just to conclude, so ASCOT has the potential to be used as a tool to improve care practice. We've demonstrated the impact CH3 can have on practice. What we didn't have from APHIS, unfortunately, was clear evidence of the impact that then goes on to have on outcomes of residents' lives. And I think that's partly because of the design of the study. It wasn't long enough for the impact on outcomes to really sort of kick in. So maybe there is further work to be done to explore the impact this has, changing care practice has on residents' social care related quality of life. And, my disclaimer's at the end.
Okay, so maybe if we take a couple of questions and then we can maybe pick it up again towards the end. Anybody got a question about that?
Hey, hi, thanks. See the care home that you found that had limited activities, etc. Was that picked up in the name of the official care quality commission? Is that what regulates in England? Was that picked up as a
No, none of all the homes were good, rated as good before we went in. Before we started, there was no concerns. Although one care home, and the one I'm looking about, the one when we're thinking about food, not the occupation. I think just before we did our research, they had CQC in it and they got a bad report.
It was during, so it was between time one and time two. It was before we did the feedback. So around the same time, basically, that we were collecting data, unbeknownst to us, from they had an inspection. And when we went to do the feedback in that home, some of the things that we had to say were very good in that home, but there were some domains, particularly around the higher order domains, that were problematic. They then revealed to us they'd had this really quite hard inspection. And what was quite interesting, which was the kind of side issue, I think, was that they ended up using our data. They used the data that we gave them to help influence practice. And then what they also did is that they used that to kind of action plan. So they showed the work that we'd done to the inspector when the inspector returned and said, look, this shows you that we are dedicated to quality, we've had researchers in, and this is what we're going to be doing to turn it around. So actually they were able to, it was quite beneficial to them. And that was the manager who was the quote at the end that said, I've used a completely changed care practice. So, you know, I think the combination of having the Care Quality Commission come in and sort of say we're not happy with some things and then having our research evidence, it was really quite, it was a good way of doing
it. Yeah, I think it complements, I think probably because you're there for quite a while and specific, you've planned a lot. But you might be more likely to pick up little issues that maybe at the overall level I could pick up inspection, but the individual people who aren't getting activity, that might not sell Care Quality pick up, but like the gentleman who wants to move them, or you know, it's not a bad KR.
I think the least amount of time spent any of the homes in the study would have been 2 weeks. So that's quite a lot longer than the inspector would spend. And some of them would be much more than that.
Okay, time for one more quick question.
Yep. I think that was a really interesting presentation. Thank you for that. And I would like to, I'm quite interested in this Ascot, but my question is, you have such a rich data including participant observation.
Yeah.
Which makes a solid evidence. What's the benefit of using ASCO? I think I can see the standardization of the outcome, maybe cross institution you can compare. But is it not because that rich data solidly made the evidence, or is there any additional benefit using ASCO?
Well, I mean, first of all, it gives you the framework in which to collect that rich data. You have those domains in which to look for, rather than just going in and what am I going to see. So you have so in terms of that rich data, you have a framework which allows you to. You also have that statistical analysis that allows you to compare with other homes, compare nationally, and to compare with other types of care.
You also have the impact.
The impact, yes.
So I think that's a big thing with Ascot. So if you just went in there and took those observational notes and then rated them, you get a sense of current quality of life, and you can maybe use other tools to do that in different frameworks.
Yeah.
But I think the difference is that what we do through our observations and our interviews and our data collection is we say, well, what would the situation be without services? And for care homes, you know, that's actually really important because they care for people with such high levels of dementia, such high levels of care needs, that actually you could show a very doom and gloom picture of their current quality of life. But when you actually compare that to what their situation would be without the help and support they get from the care home, you can see that even where quality of life, there's room for improvement, there's still a big impact.
Yeah.
And actually, if you're going to work with care teams, and I don't know if anybody here does sort of staff improvement and things like that, that's really important, not just to say you're doing bad at everything, but to actually say, but look at all the good you're doing as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why we had such a good response to our feedback.
Yeah, because the thing I wanted to add was that although today I presented two care homes and two instances where things needed improving and were, you know, people worked on them, actually we could also have presented stuff on really good things that are happening, but we wouldn't have had much to say about care improvement. So, you know, so when we presented to staff teams, we were very, very sure, very concerned about make sure we had a balanced picture as far as possible, so we would, you know, tell them the good things as well as the bad. It wasn't just, we're going to tell you everything you do wrong, and here's 20 minutes of that. It was a mixture of, you know, here's some things you do really well, and sometimes it is a case. And what I've not done today is, even within a domain, some people have a really good quality of life, so they may, you know, occupation, some people may be really good, and they manage to support some people to have a good quality of life in terms of occupation, but not for others. So it's about presenting, you know, this kind of the positives as well as the negatives and the mediocre as well.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you, Nick.